1-4-3.
1-4-3? Or
yeah,
1-2?
That's what I meant.
1-4-3. Oh, 1-4-3.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
USC, baby.
Hey, what's up? Welcome to episode number 699 of Locked On Raptors for Thursday, April the 9th. I'm your host, Sean Woodley at RaptorsHQ.com. You can find me on Twitter as always, at WoodleySean. You can find the show at Locked On Raptors. You can find links to every single episode of the podcast. And of course, please make sure you're checking out the Locked On Podcast Network. We've got just about every team in all the big four sports, plus the NCAA covered for you. Please make sure you're checking out Chad Ford's NBA Big Board. I think he's got a pretty big guest coming on in his next show. You might want to keep an eye out there on that feed. Don't want to spoil it too soon in case that's not public knowledge, but I know it and it's going to be great. So make sure you're tuning in to Chad Ford's NBA Big Board. We've got a Locked On NFL mock draft coming out very soon as well. That'll be a lot of fun ahead of the NFL draft. Please make sure you're supporting all the shows in the network that you like. It's very much appreciated if you leave a rating or a review. It really helps us out with the rankings and algorithms and all that good stuff that I don't understand at all. All right, on today's show, we are continuing our week of talking about the best season in Raptors history, which, of course, just happened less than a year ago, and a lot of it was tied to the postseason. And the postseason, of course, is something that I documented with today's guest in our book, We the Champs. Yesterday, you heard the audiobook version of the Milwaukee Bucks chapters of the series on the podcast. And today, we are joined by my co-author on We the Champs to talk about the Bucks series. It is Alex Wong. What's up, buddy?
Hey, man. 699 episodes?
Yeah, dude. It's a lot.
Wow.
Yeah.
No, that's like Mark Maron level.
Going daily adds up. Like, so many were just like dumbass 20-minute recaps of like Suns games and pretty unnotable, but this one should be fun. And tomorrow's episode, just a little teaser, is going to be a lot of fun. So everyone should tune in for episode number 700 as two of our faves, Vivek and Katie, join the show. But we're here today to talk about the Bucks series, Alex, which of course was in a lot of ways kind of the championship. I know like the finals happened and the Raptors won the title and that was great, but when they won the East, that game six, I mean, like, the eruption across the city was unlike anything I've ever seen. The just sort of relief of everything, like getting to the finals at the time, it seemed like, hey, maybe they've convinced Kawhi to stay by making it to the finals. There was all of that baked into it as well. And obviously, coming back from down 0-2 with that crazy game 3 made it all the more dramatic and all that stuff. And, you know, the finals were just weird and had the sort of Kevin Durant thing hanging over all of it. That's not to take anything away from it. We'll talk about that next week. But the Bucks series, I don't know, did you feel the same? That it kind of felt like the finals, similar maybe to when the Raptors, you know, made it to the conference finals back in 2016. No one ever really expected they were going to win that series and make it to the finals, but like winning game 7 against the Heat was just this huge release. Did you find that with the Bucks series, Alex?
Yeah, I think it was a little different just because, you know, obviously we know what happened in game 7 against the Sixers, and the turnaround was so quick, right? Like, Kawhi hit, you know, the first game 7 buzzer beater game winner, and 2 days later they're in Milwaukee for game 1, and you didn't really have a chance to really soak it in. And at the time, the Bucks were such a dominant team, not just in the regular season, but they had rolled through the first two rounds of the playoffs. And, you know, even though I think a lot of us did have a quiet confidence about this Toronto team, especially as they had gotten better throughout the playoffs, it was like, all right, now I got to go into Milwaukee to figure out how to win this series. And I'm sure we'll get into it, but I mean, like, just those first two games and losing those first two games was super just discouraging, because you felt like that this Raptors team was different from all the other Raptors teams before it. But losing those first two games felt like, okay, here we go again. Like, this team's going to fall short again.
Yeah, I think I kind of felt a little bit more at peace maybe than it sounds like you did with, like, winning the second round. This was still pre-title Raptors arrogance, right? So I was just like, hey, they made it to the conference finals. That's great. Everything's fine. And so I think because of, like, the quick turnaround, it was only one day off in between game 7 and game 1. And just like how good the Bucks were all season, like, I was kind of expecting the Raptors to lose. I think I picked the Bucks to win in 6, which apparently you shouldn't do. And I just, I was okay, I think, with like a noble loss to the Bucks in like six games or something like that, which I kind of expected to be the case. And so, but obviously once the series starts, things ramp up and you get invested and you start, you know, having those wild emotional swings, which began in game one, pretty much all condensed into one game. Raptors start off really well in game one. They go up 11 after the first quarter. Kyle Lowry's just killing it. Kawhi Leonard was great early on, I think, before really tailing off in the second half. Marc Gasol, I remember, was having like a killer defensive first half. I think he like stopped Giannis on a fast break at one point, and it was like, oh, okay, maybe he can do this. And it felt really good. And then the second half kicked in, and the Raptors' offense completely sputtered out. Kyle Lowry, I didn't remember this until going back and looking at it, but Kyle Lowry was the only Raptor to hit a field goal in the fourth quarter. Did you know that?
Yes, because I do remember that stat, because it was talked about after, and I remember just how terrible that fourth quarter was. You know, like you mentioned, like the team was playing so well, especially in the first half, and they seemed to be sputtering in the second half, but they had gone off to such a quick start that you felt like if they could just put together like a 6 minute stretch there in the second half, they could really put this game away. But nobody could do anything. There's a few Danny Green turnovers that I specifically remember in that fourth quarter. Maybe I'm mixing it up with some of the other Danny Green turnovers that he had during the postseason. Shouts to Danny. You know, the thing, I definitely remember that fourth quarter, just how frustrating it was, because and again, I mean, we're looking back on it now, but at the time it was like, oh, if they squander this one and theoretically they have to beat the Bucks like five times because they had this game in their bag, like how are they even going to do it? And the Bucks were such a good home team that you felt like, okay, if they steal game one, then it completely changes the series. But blowing that game one was going to put them in a hole. And in a way, I kind of compared it at the time to the Raptors losing game one against the Cavs the year before, when they were home in the second round. And it was like, when you're playing a team that's that good, you can't squander that chance. And I know, you know, in retrospect, that all sounds dumb now because the Raptors made us all look dumb. But yeah, that game one, definitely, I think, obviously the main narrative was, you know, wasting that Kyle Lowry game. Although, again, we were all fools for thinking that that was the last time Kyle was going to have a huge offensive game. And the other thing too, I think people maybe don't talk about is like Brooke Lopez just had a crazy outlier game.
Yeah. Yeah. He hit, I think it was 3 of 5 from three in the fourth quarter, which kind of blew the game open. And yeah, it was, I mean, you kind of forget it was still like a one possession game until like the last minute. And then the Bucks kind of pulled away. Like even without the Raptors having any offensive juice whatsoever outside of Kyle, they were able to, you know, sort of hang enough defensively. And it just, yeah, Brooke Lopez got crazy hot, had his best game of the series, and there wasn't much they could do. But yeah, I remember feeling so just discouraged that they had wasted that Kyle game, because obviously, you know, he was capable of that, you know, many times over in a series, but the fact that he did it in a game one, like I'm sitting there like a month removed from him going scoreless against the Magic in game one and all that game one talk coming out again and seeing him drop that 30, it was so satisfying. And then I think in the fourth quarter too, we had that like insane save of a ball that was going out of bounds on a really bad Danny Green pass. Shouts to Danny Green. And like it felt like a perfect Kyle over everything game. And for them to squander it really felt like a lost opportunity. And yeah, I think I even wrote in the book about how it felt a lot like that Cavs game, which was just the absolute gut punch. But very clearly the difference between the 2018 Raptors and the 2019 Raptors was that they were very okay facing adversity and like weren't going to think about it for the rest of the series that they lost game one. Because if you think back to that 2018 series, they lose game one and Dwayne Casey can't stop referencing losing game one in every single post game he has throughout the rest of the series. And they end up going out in four. And it was just like, yeah, but if we got in game one, but it never happened, obviously. And then you go into game two. And this one is kind of similar, I think, to like the Sixers game three, where things kind of were same old Raptors-y a little bit, where they just looked completely outgunned from the start and didn't really have it. Do you remember anything of game two? This is the one that I kind of gloss over and just like, yeah, they got their asses kicked. I think the third quarter was kind of okay, and Norm had a moment, but other than that, it was a really sort of saddening night because it kind of felt like the death knell of the season.
Yeah, you know, mostly from what I remember, is just the first quarter. I remember Marcus Gasol, I think, had a couple of ridiculous turnovers. And on one possession, I think he was trying to throw a pass into the low post and, like, hit off the backboard. And he was benched pretty early. And people forget now that, you know, after that Game 2 blowout loss, there was a lot of talk about whether Nick should change the starting lineup. And Mark was really struggling at the time. And that's the lasting image of Game 2 is just all the images of Mark sitting on the bench, just being really upset at himself. You could tell he was in his head a little bit. You know, it's funny because, like, I think Game 2 was what maybe people think Game 1 was going to be. You know, you would expect the Raptors on a short turnaround and the Bucks at home, that the Bucks were just going to clearly take Game 1, and maybe Game 2 was the game that the Raptors would have a chance to take. But instead, it kind of flipped, right? Like Game 1 was a game that the Raptors could steal. And Game 2, that game was over by the end of the first quarter.
Yeah, it was. It just, they never had a shot. And Gasol, you mentioned that pass where he threw it off the bottom of the backboard and Giannis got the rebound and just went and dunked. It was like, that felt a lot like some of those really crushing LeBron dunks and stuff like that. Like almost like the Kyrie to LeBron lob back in that game one, whatever godforsaken year that was. And like, it just, again, it felt same old Raptors-y. But then in the third quarter, you have Kawhi going crazy. I think he had 15 points in the third. And then Norm really kicked it up too. And I think they won the quarter. Yeah, they won it by 11. And they were kind of sort of maybe within shouting distance before it kind of got blown away. But I remember that Norm outburst in particular, I felt really excited by. Because obviously we know Norm's history of destroying the Bucks. And to see him actually kind of do something for the first time since the Magic series was like at least a sign of life that you hadn't really seen from really any of the reserves outside of Serge in Game 7 and a couple of the games against the Sixers. Like, the reserves were so unreliable. And for that to happen in a game where, yeah, like, they were out of it, but to think that, hey, if he can replicate this and everyone else doesn't play like shit in the next game, then maybe they can do it. So that was kind of my lasting impression of that game. We'll continue talking about the series against the Bucks in just a second, but first I want to tell you about MyBookie. Sports have come to a screeching halt with basketball benched and pitchers off the mound, but our friends at MyBookie aren't going to let that get you down. Stay sane and stay entertained with access to your favorite games like blackjack, roulette, slots, war, and more. It doesn't matter whether you're out on the front lines or quarantined at home, the fun doesn't have to come to an end with MyBookie. Video poker not your thing but still need a fix? They've got you covered with a host of live casino dealers online. That's right, they have professional dealers at their tables live on site 24/7. Your favorite squad sidelined because of the pandemic? Don't even sweat it. MyBookie is partnered with some of the leading esports brands to bring you wagers on virtual action straight from the court in NBA 2K20. Plus, if you're a fan of politics, you can always make bets on the shifting odds on political bets as well. You can trust the industry leaders in times like these. They're reliable, upright, and best of all, they pay fast when you win. Visit mybookie.ag and use the promo code LOCKEDONNBA for 150% bonus on your first casino deposit. That's promo code LOCKEDONNBA to receive 150% cash bonus on your first deposit. You can claim those extra funds all the way up to $750. Use promo code LOCKEDONNBA to activate the offer. That's promo code LOCKEDONNBA at mybookie.ag. You spin, you win, and you get paid. All right, Alex, so the series goes back to Toronto for Game 3, which, to me, this is, if not the most memorable, like a top 2 or 3 memorable game from the postseason run. I guess like Game 6 against Warriors and Game 7 against the Sixers are the other contenders, but this one had just so much baked into it, and the swings of emotion and just like the dread that I think a lot of people felt at certain points throughout this game, especially in the fourth quarter, was like at the highest level, I think, maybe outside of losing Game 3 against the Sixers and Pascal Siakam getting injured, tripping Joel Embiid. Like, it was just, there was a lot of emotion tied up in this one. And obviously it's the first home game after the buzzer beater as well, so there's that little sort of latent excitement throughout the city too. What do you like? I don't remember anything from this game in the first three quarters. I only remember overtime and the last six or so minutes after Kyle fouls out, and I'm just like certain that they're going to lose. What are your sort of recollections of Game 3 against the Bucks?
Yeah, you know, in retrospect, you know, Kyle fouling out, and I believe Norm fouled out later on as well. And, you know, looking back on it, it's remarkable that the Raptors won that game.
It doesn't make any sense.
it was ridiculous. I mean, Kawhi had a huge performance, and obviously he was. I think this was around the time where you started really noticing that he was just limping on the court at all times, and he wasn't maybe as comfortable as he wanted to be. Like, he would dunk the ball, or he would get an and one, and sometimes there would be certain possessions where you would, you know, he even himself, it felt like, was kind of questioning whether his legs were okay, like any time that he landed. But, you know, a lot of specific moments that I remember, there was a Chris Middleton three-pointer that I believe would have either tied the game or put them ahead late, that he missed, that was in transition. And I think about that a lot, because when you talk about how these series and how a playoff run can swing, that was one of the biggest swing moments for me for the Raptors season. Because, you know, I don't think that was necessarily the best look for Middleton, but it's definitely a shot that he could make. And if he makes that shot, the Raptors go down 3-0 and the season is effectively over. And we're not talking about any of this. So that was one moment. The other moment for me is that, you know, the Raptors were trailing at one point in overtime as well. And Marc Gasol hit a huge three from the top of the key. And the thing I remember too is just Mark having a huge bounce back game. I think there was a lot of people who questioned whether he could get out of that funk after his game two performance. And, you know, he's a veteran. He's been in the playoffs before. He's been to the conference finals before. But, you know, when a player gets it in his head, you don't know if he's going to be able to get out of it, you know, especially in such a short turnaround in a playoff series. But Mark did, and he went on to be just incredible for the rest of that series, and also especially in the finals as well. So those are the two big moments I remember, aside from, obviously, Kawhi's performance.
Yeah, so this was the game you mentioned when we were talking about game two, that after game two, there was like a lot of speculation about lineup changes. And even Nurse said the day before game three, yeah, we're probably going to look at some lineup changes. And I think everybody was sitting there waiting before the game to see like the Raptors.com, like the Raptors Twitter graphic come out with like the change starting five. And it ended up not changing at all. They did change up some rotation stuff, and they changed up the matchups most importantly. But they stuck with Gasol, and I think that was sort of, to me, a real sort of example of the difference between Nick Nurse and Dwayne Casey. Like, you think to some of those series where things got dire for the Raptors against, like, the Cavs, and Dwayne Casey was rolling out, like, Bismack Biyombo, Jonas Valanciunas starting front courts to just not get killed by Tristan Thompson on the glass. And, like, just changing things up outside of starting Patrick Patterson. Oh, I think he even did that. Like, he relented and did that at one point. But, like, he would change things up so quickly when things weren't working. Whereas Nurse, I think, kind of realized, like, look at our starting five. It's a perfectly constructed starting five. It's been beating the piss out of everybody all postseason long and whenever it played together in the regular season. Like, if we're going to go down, we're going to go down with Marc Gasol as our center, the guy who, like, is single-handedly responsible for the defense becoming this, like, morphing, you know, just, like, call-the-defense-on-the-fly machine. And he stuck with it. And Gasol actually decided to, like, take his open threes, which was encouraging and nice. And that was great. And this was also the game where Kawhi took over the Giannis assignment on defense full-time. And he held Giannis to 5 of 16 from the field. And it was like, oh, okay, that's interesting. And, you know, it was sort of the thing, I think, at that point where it's like, okay, maybe they can't keep this up the entire series, but maybe he can. Maybe this is just what he's going to do to Giannis defensively. And so, like, those changes were huge. And again, I think really sort of spoke to Nick Nurse's advantage over Dwayne Casey and also over Mike Budenholzer, who later in the series would have some chances to change things up too and never did. I went back and looked at my notes, and when Kyle fouls out with like 6:12 left, I just wrote, "Welp, they're fucked." I was certain, because Fred VanVleet came in, and Fred had hit like five shots since the Magic series, and I was just so certain that he wasn't going to be able to run the offense efficiently the way Kyle did. I mean, the play before Kyle fouled out, he subbed in with five fouls and like set up a three for Norm Powell, like that, just like a classic smart Kyle pass and read, and it set up a three. And it was like, oh yeah, that's why you bring him in and risk it with five fouls. And then Fred hit one three. He didn't really, I mean, he didn't have his child until the next game, so he still had a rough shooting night. And Danny Green had a rough night too, but they both hit threes late in the game that were just like huge. I mean, Green went from 0 of 8 from the field, and then hit one three in overtime. And it was like, yeah, that's the best 1 of 9 I've ever seen. The most crucial 1 of 9 you'll ever see anybody have, because they were so just like trying to scrape together something down the stretch too. It was just the swings in that game, especially when Powell fouled out, were just enormous. And then Gasol was on five fouls as well. And I remember being panicked for the entirety of overtime as Gasol was on five fouls. Just like, if he fouls out, they're absolutely toast. Like, they can't have a third guy foul out here. And they did such a good job, I think, of working around him having five fouls. Like, Fred and Danny were playing like at the rim to keep Gasol from contesting shots, and like doing a damn good job of it too. It was pretty crazy, man. And then you also had in this game Siakam missing those free throws too that could have sealed it late. He misses both. That leads to the Middleton bucket to send it to overtime after Fred blocks him originally, and then Middleton gets the rebound. I mean, can you remember a game where your emotions were this toyed with by the Raptors ever?
No. This is honestly one of the wildest games, and this is a game that probably deserves its own podcast, just because of all the sequences and obviously how much it meant. And I think you made a really good point about Nick compared to Dwayne. I think every time the going got tough in the playoffs, the one thing that Dwayne would always look to do was to make a lineup change. And I think his lineup changes always had a trickle-down effect of not only impacting the starting lineup, but just affecting every player in the rotation. Versus Nick, you know, they're facing obviously a crisis point, down 2-0 in the conference finals. And the thing that Nick thinks about is not changing the lineup, but how can I put my players in a better position to succeed? And, you know, switching the defensive strategy, you know, having Kawhi on Giannis, and obviously Mark, you know, played a huge part too in containing Giannis in that series, I think really does illustrate the difference between Nick and Dwayne, whereas Nick knows that there are different ways to use the same lineup and to maximize the talent that's on the floor, whereas Dwayne was really always very quick to just try to swap in another player just to make a change for the sake of making it and not really giving his team an advantage. But like even you mentioning like Pascal missing his free throws, like I rewatched this game, I think like a week and a half ago, and I already forgot about that detail as well. There's just so many things that happened in this series. And when we were watching it in real time, it's funny you mentioned like you writing in the notes after Kyle fouled out. I think the tension was just way too high in that building in that game. Because as much as like you mentioned that, hey, you would have been okay with them, like, you know, losing to the Bucks, maybe in a hard-fought series. For me, it was like, man, now that they're here, now that there's four teams left, and we knew that in the Western Conference, you know, the Warriors were probably going to beat the Blazers, and they did. They swept them, and they were without KD. Suddenly, it was like, okay, like, you can actually let yourself think about the possibility of the Raptors actually winning it all. Mm. I know it was hard at the time, especially because they were down 2-0, but you know, this wasn't like 2016 against LeBron and the Cavs. This was a realistic chance. And, you know, they had Kawhi Leonard and they had this, you know, formidable starting five, and they had this top eight that could compete with anyone. And I think that was all the emotions in that game of, you know, let's get this game, let's get back in the series, because, you know, you don't want to let this chance slip away, especially with Kawhi's free agency hanging in the air.
Yeah, definitely. Also, one last note on Game 3, shouts to Jody Meeks for his 42 seconds of play. I think that was at the end of the third quarter, and they were just like trying to buy a section of game with some guys on the bench, and it was just like, yeah, okay, we're doing the Jody Meeks thing. All right, and he was only a minus two.
That's how you knew Jeremy Lin was in the doghouse, right? Like, he couldn't even get those 42 seconds. That's all I'm saying. I'm not trying to accuse Nick of racism or anything.
Well, Jeremy Lin did get to play in the next game. He played 2 minutes and 8 seconds of garbage time as the Raptors beat the piss out of the Bucks in Game 4. This was the one that this was before this game. Serge was talking about sort of his experience back when the Thunder came back against the Spurs, whatever it was, 2014 or whatever year it was, 2012, from down 0-2 to win the series in 6. And like, it was all being played up as this is going to be the most difficult game of the series. Winning the second one to tie it at 2 is borderline impossible. Like, it's really, really tough. And they just made it look so easy. And it was because they actually got like bench production in this game. They got 48 combined points from Powell, Van Vliet, and Ibaka. This is when Van Vliet started his just insane heater. He went 5 of 6 and 3 of 3 from deep. Powell led the team in shot attempts. I remember he got so hot in the third quarter that at the end of the third, he had like a heat check three from the logo that I was like fully on board with. So I was just like, yeah, why not? Just do it. See what you got. And then Ibaka had a great game too. And it was all very well timed because this was the game where Kawhi dunked on Giannis so hard that he A, looked like he shit himself, and B, messed up his knee. And it was like very apparent from then on that he was never going to be 100% again. But this was kind of the game where they coalesced for the first time really since maybe the first round. But even then, there were guys who weren't really pulling their weight early on. This was like the first complete team performance they had basically in the entire playoffs. What do you remember of game four?
Yeah, you know, I think, like you mentioned, that was the first, you know, maybe that was the best team performance since that Magic series in the first round. And again, you talk about just how thin the margins are when you get to the conference finals. The Raptors would not have won that game and would not have won that series if those guys like Norm, like Fred and Serge stepped up. You know, they needed that game, and that was the game they needed to pick up Kawhi after he played all those minutes in game three. And again, I feel like game four and game three kind of played out maybe in reverse of what people would usually expect, because, you know, a 2-0 series, when you're down 2-0, you go back home, you know, usually you would expect the home team to get game three, and then game four is the real battle. But, you know, again, it switched, right? Like game three was the real battle. And game four was just a blowout. You know, I remember Serge dunking and making his angry, mean mug face. And that was just a really, I think it was a sigh of relief, right? Like to even the series. And now you had questions about the Bucks, because I think at that point you started to have questions about Eric Bledsoe. And you started to wonder whether, you know, Giannis was now being at least contained. So who else was going to step up? So they evened the series, and obviously the Bucks still had home court advantage. But that was a real sigh of relief to say, okay, now the series is reset, and they actually didn't really have to fight that hard to get this one. And, you know, now they really had a chance.
Oh, man, Eric Bledsoe really earning his championship ring in this one. 2 of 7 in 20 minutes, got benched. Malcolm Brogdon also missed shots in this one, which never happened in the playoffs because he was their second best player. Yeah, this was also like the only really good Chris Middleton game, and the Raptors survived it, which was nice. But yeah, and also shout out to Nikola Mirotic as well. God, I forgot how much easier he made things too. It's like so many guys to thank.
Remember he was the guy that the Raptors to get at the trade deadline.
Yeah, and I was like despondent when the Bucks got him for like 4 second rounders. And this was right before the Raptors traded for Gasol, and then, you know, getting Gasol made me not so sad anymore. But yeah, that was a weird afternoon, because like you could sense the arms race was definitely there. I mean, the Sixers had just done the Harris trade after doing the Butler trade earlier, and it was just like, well, we got to do something. And then the Gasol thing comes down, and it's like, holy shit. By the way, Gasol, probably his second consecutive best game as a Raptor in game four. He had 17 points. He was 6 of 11. He had 3 threes. He had 7 assists. Like, this was like peak Gasol. These two games were incredible. They were super fun. And then it goes back to game 5 in Milwaukee. And look, I was kind of in the boat, all right, just get it to game 7 and maybe you can steal it. I was kind of expecting a loss in game 5. And then this was the game that like really dispelled any lingering notions that the Raptors were like some coward playoff team. Like, just a badass performance, mostly from Kawhi, poor Brook Lopez and his head top and the threes that he had launched over top of it. But I don't know. What do you remember of game 5? Because it was such a thrilling game to watch them come back from down, I think, 12 in the third quarter. Their offense was kind of sputtering. And then they just like turned it on, and their defense hit that level that we saw in games during the regular season against like the Celtics early on, the game with the double block, and like some Sixers games and some other ones where they just had one of those sort of 5 to 6 minute stretches of defense where they're like, nope, you're not scoring on us, and we're going to turn all of these misses into offense. And that's what they did. And it was just, I don't know, it was the most like professional ass performance I think I can recall from a Raptors team in the postseason.
Yeah, no, this was definitely the new Raptors. I think I remember 3 things from that game. And, you know, you talked about, you know, favorite games from the playoffs. You know, for me, this was my favorite game of this series. I think people will pick game 6 just because of what it meant and the Raptors going to the finals. but this was the most satisfying win. You know, the first thing I remember was the first half was just a slog. I believe it was a really low scoring game, or the Raptors were just really struggling, but somehow they were still in it because of their defense. And it felt like, you know, if you could just hang on, if you could stay in this game and just keep the deficit, you know, within a reasonable margin, that, you know, maybe in the fourth quarter, because you have Kawhi Leonard, that it'll work. And it did. And that's the second thing I remember, is Kawhi just taking over in that fourth quarter. You know, any comparisons that you had of Kawhi being like this modern day Michael Jordan during the playoff run, I think this is the game that really proved that, because he just took over in the fourth quarter. And the Raptors have been on the opposite end of that so many times going up against LeBron. Now they had their own LeBron in the fourth quarter, and it was just thrilling to watch. And like all those shots over Brook Lopez. And also there was one possession I remember when he missed a shot and he got his own offensive rebound. And I think it was kind of like an innocuous play. It wasn't anything flashy, but I was just like, man, this guy is just owning the entire game right now, like in every facet. And it was just remarkable to watch. And the last thing, of course, Fred outscored the Bucks bench by himself.
Yeah. 7 of 9 from three. Just, God, Fred Jr. forever. Magical baby. Yeah, this Kawhi game, that fourth quarter from Kawhi, I think there were three stretches of the playoffs in particular, and maybe four if you count game one against the Sixers where he had 45, but that was more of just like a full game dominance type of thing. I think it was this game in the fourth quarter. I think it was the last 2 minutes of game six, which we'll get to, and I think it was the closing stretch of game five in Toronto of the finals when it seemed like he was going to win the damn thing by himself. Like, those were the moments where it was just, it felt like what it must have been like to watch LeBron destroy the Raptors, right? Like, it was just like, holy, like, how is a person this good at basketball, and how do they have this much control over the game on both ends of the floor? And it was just, it was remarkable to watch. He was really good at basketball, and those were some of the best examples of it. He, that fourth quarter was just something else, man. He was...
And there's nothing more there's nothing more satisfying than doing it on the road too. You
know? Yeah, yeah. This was also a game where he had a total of 9 assists too, a playoff career high. Like, they were pretty much loading up on him for the first three quarters, and it wasn't really till the fourth when he completely exploded. I think he had 15 in the fourth. But like for the most part, he was just setting dudes up, and I believe the number is he either scored or assisted 62 of the points the Raptors scored out of the 105, and all of the assists he had were on threes, and I think a lot of them were Fred threes. Like he was like hitting that level of playmaking too, which I think is kind of more carried over this season as more of a regular thing that he has quite often. But it was pretty awesome to see him like have that kind of control of just not just the offense, but just like everyone else on the floor too, like able to set guys up. It was something we hadn't really seen a whole lot of. And then we go to game six, which you mentioned favorite games of the play. This is my favorite game in Raptors history, I think. This is the thing I wrote my personal thing about my grandfather after they won game six. This is the game where my parents came downtown to watch, even though they like haven't been to a bar since 1984. and they ended up watching the end of the game in the square and everything. And it just, I don't know. This was the game that I went, my dad gave me a 20 before I went into the game. And he was like, all right, if they win, go buy yourself a drink. And this was the game where I went and ordered a pitcher when I got to the Firkin on Harbor after they won, and recorded like a really sort of meandering, directionless, emotional solo podcast because no one else wanted to come on because everyone else wanted to go party and walk the streets. And then I went to the bar, ordered a pitcher, and just drank straight from the pitcher. That was just like the best night ever. It kicked so much ass. And the game itself was, it was everything that you wanted it to be too. Like that third and fourth quarter with Kawhi just deciding in the late stages of the third, okay, I'm taking this over. I'm going to get every rebound. I'm going to either score or assist on the final 10 points of the quarter, get us to within five. It just, again, it's insane that a dude who could do that played for the team that I like. It's just... It was wild. What were your recollections of game six?
Yeah, you know, the one thing I do remember for sure is that last 2-3 minutes in the third quarter when the Raptors were down 15 and they just couldn't get anything going all game, and it felt like this was going to go back to a game seven, and Kawhi just took over on both ends of the floor. You know, defensive rebounds, offensive rebounds, steals, blocks, scoring, assisting. Like, I think there was like an 8-9 possession stretch where, like, he was just involved in absolutely everything on both ends of the floor. And, you know, I don't have the stats, but he had a monster rebounding game in this one, right?
Yeah, he had 17 boards.
Yeah. Like, he just did everything, and it was remarkable. Like, if you pair his game five fourth quarter performance with what he did in the second half in game six, and you think about the fact that he did this while he was not at his physical peak, like, it was remarkable. Like, even 70% or 80% of Kawhi was still enough to carry this team past the finish line. And depending on how much you respect last year's Bucks team, like, he did it against a really, really good Bucks team. A Bucks team that, when they were up 2-0 in the Eastern Conference Finals, people were talking about them as one of the historically best teams, because statistically they were, right? Regular season and playoffs, they were beating teams up, and their point differential and their net ratings were up there with the top teams of all time. And, you know, just to put a bow on that in game six for Kawhi to kind of wrap up this 2-0 comeback and win four in a row and carry the Raptors to the finish line, that will always be memorable. The most memorable thing for me was after they won and they were presented with the trophy in the arena, and these huge Lowry chants just broke out in the arena for Kyle. And I'll never forget that, because, you know, it just gave me chills just knowing, obviously, how much Kyle means to this city and how much he's done for the franchise. But also at that moment, I was like, man, you know, we let all these years pass without ever giving Kyle those type of chants. Like, how did those chants not break out, like, every five games when he's taking, like, four charges in the fourth quarter in the middle of February, like, to beat the Charlotte Hornets? Like, I feel like him getting that appreciation from the fans was just really special. And obviously, this was the game that sent the Raptors to the finals. And it was just ridiculous to be in that building to see all that unfold and to say, man, after all these years of watching the Raptors and after the last 5-6 years of watching them in the playoffs, like, they made it. They made the finals. And now it was really a chance to think about, hey, like, they really have a chance to win this now.
Yeah, that post game is, like, with Ernie Johnson giving out the trophy, is one of my favorite videos to just go back and watch, because you have Kyle just, like, beaming. The smile's insane. You have Masai being like, we're not satisfied, we want to win, we're going to win in Toronto. And it was just like, wrestling shit from Masai. Just like, crowd in his hand. And yeah, it was such a relief. And like, the excitement of the finals hadn't even really kicked in to me yet. It was just like, they climbed the mountain to get to, like, getting to the finals, I think, you know, was a reasonable goal for this team, especially after they traded for Kawhi. And obviously the way the Warriors season played out and the injuries and stuff, it made winning the title more likely. I don't think they beat the Warriors if they're fully healthy, but whatever, that's fine. Luck happens all the time. But to me, like, my idea of a successful season going into it was, all right, make the finals. If you lose to the Warriors, fine. But if you make the finals, that is just, like, absolutely, it vindicates the trade tenfold. It is entirely, you know, you've backed up your reasoning for getting rid of Dwayne Casey and bringing in Nick Nurse. Like, all of it becomes successful if they make the finals, for sure. Even, like, making it to the conference finals, I was probably okay with, because I was captain, it's fine. But making it to the finals, like, really was the symbol of a successful season. And it's not often that you actually, like, reach your potential and reach your ceiling as a team, right? Like, we see it all the time. Teams flame out early on. And for them to do it in, like, this one-off season where nothing was certain for the future, and they put all their chips on the table with the Gasol trade at the deadline as well, it was I think we're going to look back and look at the Raptors title run. And maybe we're too close to it to really have a good sense of this, but it really is, like, one of the tidiest, most, like, poetic seasons you could possibly write. Just the way everything broke, the way the playoffs broke down. You had the crazy moments against the Sixers. You had the Bucks series. Like, everything, even down to, like, Jonas Valanciunas never getting to play again after getting hurt against the Warriors, and then not getting to play, getting traded the day he was supposed to return for Gasol, the guy who tied everything together. It was such a, like, clean narrative of a season. And you rarely get that, right? Like, you rarely have something like that that comes together in such a perfect, tidy way. But it did, and we're damn lucky to have seen it, because it was unlike anything I think we'll ever see again. And even if they go and win like another title down the line sometime, there's very little possibility it's going to be in this sort of the same mold as this team, because very few teams, if any, in history have gone this route where it's like, let's trade for a guy for 1 year and just see what happens. And it just it worked out perfectly, because Masai is a genius, I guess. I don't know. Closing thoughts on the Bucks series?
Yeah, you know, I think more on what you just said, it's a really good point, because, you know, I think championship runs, you know, if you're rooting for your team, they're all special to you, right? Like it doesn't matter if your team doesn't have a game seven buzzer beater shot that bounces four times, or you know, the type of other performances that Kawhi put together. But I do think when we step back from this in like 5, 10, 15 years, that objectively this Raptors playoff run is one of the most memorable of the last 10, 20 years. Like you talked about, just the circumstances of trading for Kawhi and really going all in for what did end up being a one-year thing, and getting Marc Gasol to really complete the puzzle at the trade deadline. And forget about all that, just the iconic playoff moments, right? Like I think for any other team, just that game seven shot would have been enough to be a memorable playoff run for a lifetime. But then you add in this Bucks series, which I feel like as we talk about it more, it just seems more and more outlandish that the Raptors actually won those four straight games. And obviously, I know you're going to talk about the finals on your next podcast, but the finals as well, right? Like the way that they won three games in Oracle, and the way they closed it out in game six, like everything was just perfect. And, you know, specifically to the Bucks series, I really think just, you know, even talking about it and revisiting it with you now, it's just so remarkable. And I still can't believe that the Raptors really came back and won those four straight games in that fashion.
Thank you, Eric Bledsoe. Thank you, Nikola Mirotic. Thank you, Mike Budenholzer, for adhering to your minutes limits for Giannis. Really, really did us a solid with that one. You're a wonderful man. Give him Coach of the Year. Fuck it.
And people forget, Bud was the first person they interviewed for the job before the season started.
Yeah,
when they fired Doink.
Yeah, he was. Glad that didn't transpire. Just, and then him, like, earlier this season when the Raptors played the Bucks again and was like, yeah, no, we're not really going to, like, you know, screw around with what we're going to do in this game. Or, you know, we play the way we play. We don't really change it up. I'm like, yes, bud, I know. That's why I love you. thank you again. All right, man. I think we could probably leave it there. This was fun. The Bucks series was fun. I'm sure as quarantine carries on, we'll probably see TSN re-air it about 7,000 times as they run out of things to re-air. There's only so many games from the Sam Mitchell Coach of the Year season they can go and re-air, I guess. So I'm sure they'll come back around to it in good time. Alex, where can people check out your work? Do you have anything you'd like to plug right now?
No, not really, man. I'm just plugging away, you know, working on different things, like all other freelancers and creatives right now, just trying to keep busy while sports is interrupted. So, you know, I did recently, start a new personal podcast called Stephen LeBron Radio. I'm going to do a lot of exciting stuff. Going to have you on, and revisit some old Raptors seasons as well. So, you know, if anyone wants to check that out, it's Stephen LeBron Radio. You can find it on, you know, iTunes, Spotify, and all other networks. Right now I'm sticking to a schedule of dropping episodes daily, every Monday to Friday, to kind of give myself a routine and honestly, selfishly, to have some social interaction with people to talk about sports, life, and other things. So yeah, if there's one thing I want to plug, you know, go check that out. And it was fun revisiting this series with you, Sean. You know, I think it'll always be fun revisiting the championship run. Like, it'll never get old.
No, absolutely not. That's the fun perk of winning a championship, is that shit lasts forever. Thanks for coming on, man. Go listen to Stephen LeBron Radio, and you can find me at Woodley Sean. You can subscribe to, rate, and review wherever you get your podcast. It's very much appreciated. Tell a friend. If you have someone who's maybe complaining in the DMs about how bored they are, suggest this podcast and they can get a listen to all of the old Raptors content that we're going through this week. Next week, we're going to dive into the 2013-14 season, I think, because that is personally one of, if not my favorite regular seasons of all time, the year where they got good and turned things around with the Rudy Gay trade. So we'll dive into that next week. But tomorrow, we're going to finish off the talk of the championship season with Vivek Jacob and Katie Heindel. We're going to do trivia about the championship season with the two of them. That's going to be fun. We'll go on tangents. It'll be great. So stay tuned for that on Friday. And until then, have a great day, everybody. We'll talk to you on Friday with another episode of Locked On Raptors.